When the U.S. Supreme Court met this week, there were only 8 justices on the bench instead of 9. Chief Justice William Rehnquist was missing during oral arguments for several cases, and this has renewed speculation about the future composition of the High Court. Joining us now is NPR legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg. Hi, Nina.
Hi, Steve.
What was wrong with Chief Justice Rehnquist?
Well, he fell over the Thanksgiving holiday and hurt his knee, I guess, rather badly. So he had surgery almost immediately. And he's been at the courthouse itself, but apparently he has to keep his legs straight when he's sitting down. And if he were to do that, he'd probably be kicking Sandra Day O'Connor off the bench. So he didn't attend, although Justice Stevens, who presided, made an announcement saying he would participate by reading the transcript of the oral argument and the briefs, and he would certainly participate in resolution of the cases. So he's not giving up the chiefship in any way, shape, or form.
And the justices have signaled this week their intention to go into a couple of really controversial areas. Let's talk about affirmative action. The Supreme Court is going to review the constitutionality of using race as a factor in allowing university admissions. Why consider that case now?
Well, in a lot of ways, they couldn't avoid it much longer. A lot of conservative think tanks have spurred, in the last 10 years, a drive to eliminate affirmative action in higher education. They've brought a lot of cases. They've won some, and they've lost some. And what that means is that there's not a uniform rule in the country anymore. There was in 1978 when Justice Powell wrote the critical decision in a Supreme Court case, in the Bakke case, in which he said race could be a factor, but not the only factor. That is now greatly in doubt. This is not a court that's friendly to affirmative action. And yet one would have to say that affirmative action in education is probably the most successful place where there has been any kind of racial preferences, if you want to call it that at all, because it is the gateway to greater opportunity later on. And it is not permanent. It's for when you get in, and then if you can't perform, you're out the door anyway.
Now, the elder justices of the Supreme Court this week signaled their willingness to go into an even more controversial area, perhaps. The state of Texas has an anti-sodomy law. Under that law, a couple of men were at home. Authorities entered their house on a totally unrelated charge. They discovered these two men in bed and they jailed them under the anti-sodomy law. They were kept in jail overnight. Sounds kind of astounding in this day and age, but I gather that it was entirely legal under the laws of Texas.
It was. And the cops came to the house. They had a false report of a disturbance. The door was unlocked. They entered. They found these two guys in bed and they arrested them. And then they spent the night in jail and then were fined and appealed all the way to the Supreme Court. Now, I guess there are about 24 states that have anti-sodomy laws still on the books. Only 4 of them, however, bar certain kinds of sexual practices for homosexuals alone. So there is, first of all, what they call in the legal profession an equal protection argument here that, okay, you say that heterosexuals can do this, but homosexuals can't, and that's not equal protection of the law. On a greater scale, I think, the court last ruled on this in 1986 in a very famous case called Bowers versus Hardwick from Georgia, and it upheld Georgia's anti-sodomy law. And the language of that decision today would be simply politically unacceptable, I think it's fair to say. Justice White, writing for the majority, said to strike down that law would repudiate the moral teachings of millennia. And Chief Justice Berger, writing in a separate opinion, quoted a lot of famous people as saying this was an enormously immoral practice that was anathema to mankind. In terms of the court since then, the justices have not cited that opinion almost ever. It's as if it didn't exist. And they've had gay rights cases in which they sided with homosexual rights, and they have had gay rights cases where they ruled against gay rights but were very respectful of the folks who brought the case. So now I think it was long considered just a matter of time before they actually revisited the question of whether homosexual conduct by consenting as adults in the privacy of their home can be made a crime. And I think the time is now here, and I would be incredibly surprised if they upheld this law.
One other case I want to ask about. Next week, the court will take up whether an anti-cross-burning law in Virginia is constitutional. Is that a freedom of speech issue or what?
Yeah, the people who burned the cross claim it's a freedom of speech issue. And the state of Virginia says cross-burning inherently is an act of intimidation against certain groups of people, and we ought to be able to outlaw it. My guess is that the Supreme Court, again, took this case because they wanted to make clear that the cross is a symbol. And other symbols, they've said, are protected speech, like burning the flag. So burning the cross is no different. And that if you go on somebody's property and burn a cross to frighten them, there are all kinds of state laws to deal with that. You know, vandalism, threatening behavior, terrorism, even statutes, but not just plain cross burning by itself. Well, I could be wrong.
Is it as easy to guess which way the court may be leaning in this particular case?
You know, I'm always loath to predict. And one of the reasons I'm always loath to predict is that the rule at the Supreme Court is it only takes 4 votes to agree to hear a case. It takes 5 votes to win a case. And so that's why the late Justice William Brennan used to say to his new law clerks, what's the most important rule around here? And they would say, oh, it's the rule of this, and it's the rule of the First Amendment, the Fifth Amendment. And he'd say, no, 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 no. And he'd just hold up the fingers of one hand. 5.
NPR legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg. Nina, thanks very much.
Thank you, Steve.